teapot. That's better. Right then. Annabelle, the greedy anteater.
Yes, sir.
Mr. X, the vole, and Wally, the man-eating cobra.
Yes, sir.
Jeffrey, the blue-nosed toad. Jeffrey, the blue-nosed toad.
He's not here, sir.
Very well, very well. Mitzi, the pink-bottomed tadpole.
Yes, sir.
Jack, the hairy skunk.
Yes, sir.
Vanessa, the slug.
Yes, sir.
And Jim, the gnat.
Yes, sir.
Right then. Are you all here?
Yes, sir.
Very well, very well. I'm afraid I've got some bad news. The ark's full. Yes, for the Angus Prune Tune, we once again bring to the microphone Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, and Melody. And that can only mean one thing.
Prune is busting out all over.
It's time. Sorry, I'll read that again. Again.
Tonight, we look at the great aristocracy of Great Britain.
Now, I expect you think that this script is going to be full of hearty jokes about people shooting peasants instead of pheasants. Well, if you think you can write better ones, you're perfectly at liberty to start your very own radio station. Except that you're not allowed to. So there.
Over here, the moon is mean.
In search of field material, I went down for the weekend to Tally Off, the country home of Lord Fawcett and his wife, Lady Fawcett, the tap dancer. When I arrived, Lady Fawcett was seated at the harmonium.
Now,
good evening, Lady Fawcett. Is Lord Fawcett around?
He's in the garden pottering. He's done a lot of pottering ever since we built a new conservative at the side of the house. It's very bad for him. He's been suffering recently from housemaid's knee.
What did you do?
I fired the housemaid. It made me wonder where Lord Henry caught his athlete's foot.
It's an embarrassing position.
Yes. Yes, it is, and not as good as many. As Lord Henry said afterwards, servants are very difficult to get hold of nowadays. Ah! Here's Teddy, my favourite nephew.
Hello, you BBC chap here.
I'll show you your room.
Thank you. I do hope it likes me.
Follow me. Follow me and mind where you put your feet.
I'll just leave them by the door.
This is my uncle's room, Viscount Coddles Fawcett, ABKCMGMCBARTPMMP. He's nearly two. This is my cousin's room, Mrs. De Vere Wellington, formerly the Honourable Virginia Fawcett. She lost the Honourable when she married. If not before. She used to share this room with her sister Clara, now Mrs. Pound. She married money.
Lady Fawcett does have a further daughter, the ravishing Lavinia.
Yes, she's been further than most of her daughters.
And where does her son live?
Oh, don't speak to me about her wicked, drunken son. He spends all his time haunting bras.
Don't you mean bars?
That as well. This is your room. Ring if you need anything.
Ding dong.
Quite right. And if that doesn't work, try the bell.
That evening, there was to be a grand soiree. Upstairs, the butler was instructing the servants.
The guests will be arriving at 8. Your job will be to carry them in. Keep them happy and make sure they keep their impoverished noble hands off the silverware.
At tea time, the ravishing Lavinia, the family daughter, arrived for the weekend like a fresh morning lark. And there's nothing like a fresh morning lark.
Hello, my lord father.
Hello, ravishing Lavinia. Did you have a good holiday, Miguel?
Oh, jolly super. I couldn't resist popping off to the sun.
Isn't that rather a long way? Just my fatherly joke. I wish I was dead.
Meanwhile, the major domo was briefing the chambermaids.
You, sweetie, get into your briefs. Everyone and everything's coming down for the weekend.
As the guests arrived, a footman announced them.
The ravishing Lavinia.
Hello.
Hello. My lord droops and my lady with her.
I'm not surprised at the heat.
Heaven and earth, Richard Crown. Ladies and gentlemen, drinks are now being served by the swimming pool.
Well, how clever. We get the butler to serve ours.
Now, come along, you everybody, I've invited Mr. Potts, the local MP, and I want you all to meet him.
But he's a socialist.
Is he? Oh. Well, we're all men of the world.
Are we?
Dinner was a glittering array and food. At the head of the table sat the family dogs, eating almost regally off gilded platters. Lord Henry sat in the middle of the table and refused to get off. He was busily talking to Mr. Potts and Lord Simon. All the time, the waiters were bustling to and fro.
You're sweet, sir. You're pretty marvelous yourself right now. Thank you, sir.
But the big trouble at dinner occurred when Lord Henry found that Mr. Potts had been seeing the ravishing Lavinia between the blancmange and the coffee.
Sir, I understand there is something between you and my daughter.
I haven't seen her for a little bit.
For a little bit of what?
Well, you don't understand.
You don't understand. My daughter is coming out next Tuesday.
She said she was coming out tonight.
I thank you to remember the Fawcett family motto, gently, gently.
All right. Well, what does it mean?
Don't force it.
And finally, we were all led to the ballroom and invited to take part in an elimination dance.
The next dance is an elimination dance. Listen to me when the music stops. If you are eliminated, you will be required to pay a forfeit. Take your partners quite sedately. Circle left, but keep it stately. Promenade and dare-see-dare. Whoop! All butlers, footmen and tweenies, leave the floor, please. That's better. Now, carry on. Back to back and point to point. Over the sticks and rock the stop. Any gentleman not wearing monogrammed underpants? Get out! Thank you. Chins right in. Nose is in the air. Bottoms up and stop. All the people who went to a comprehensive school, line up over there. Change your partners in between. Don't touch, you don't know where he's been. Take his stop. All Berts, Bills, Gladys's, Adas and Nelsies, climb into the ancient family canon, please. On we go. Feet right out, breathing in and stop. Anyone who says margarine instead of margarine, wash the dishes. All footballers and actors, off the floor. All non-skiers, get out. Redwick University's out. Single barrel names, new Borussia Dauphin girls off. Out. Ferry fanciers, bull hunters and interpolar high mass segregationalists out. Anyone else? Out. Out. Go on. Get out. Out. Ah! I win. I win. I'm the best. Never owe me. I'm the best.
Right then, are you ready for your driving test, then?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yes, you look very young. How old are you?
19, sir.
Well, that's no good. You've got to be 17 to drive a car. I'll tell you what, we'll put you down at 17 and 24 months.
Thank you very much.
All right, now, are you ready?
Yes.
Start up. All right, forward. Slowly. Faster. Stop. And reverse. It's a one-point turn. And stop. Good. Now try with the car.
I haven't got one. They,
What?
They said I could hire one here.
Well, have you got a proper driving license?
Well, of course not.
Well, you're not driving my car, then.
I've got a television license.
Well, you're not driving my television, either. That is how accidents happen.
Dog license?
That'll do. You can take your test on my dog. You're not going to pass your test that way, you know.
No.
Right now, you just stand on one leg and I'll ask you a few questions, right?
Right.
Why are you standing on one leg?
You tell me to.
Quite right. Now, how about traffic lights?
Yes, how about traffic
lights? How about traffic lights?
How about traffic lights?
How about traffic lights? Fantastic. Now, let's pretend that you're travelling along a dual carriageway, right?
Yeah.
At 40 miles an hour, and you see a car coming at you along the wrong lane. What do you do?
Stop pretending.
Good, good. You're doing well. Now, let's see what you know about signals. What would you do if you saw me put my hand out like this?
Give you a sweetie.
Thank you. Now, you show me some road signs.
I'm afraid I haven't brought any with me.
Oh, never mind. Let's go for a drive. Imagine that you're driving along the motorway at a nice, easy 45 miles an hour. Traffic is traveling along at about the same speed, and and the road is quite straight for miles and miles and miles, and just the odd bridge every 400.
Hey!
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Motorways always do that to me. Now, let the clutch out. And now, I think that's all. Off you go. Oh, one last question.
Yes?
Why is that policeman wearing big white gloves?
I don't know.
To keep his hands warm. You failed. Bye. Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, as the poet said, comes all manner of things. But be that as it may, we are now joining once again those 3 or 4 month old babies outside the supermarket.
Morning, Hugh.
Morning, Johnny. I say, you look dodgy this morning. Got a hangover. That was a damn good party of yours last night. You were smashed. Honestly, one glass of rosehip syrup and you were away. You're out of your mind. You know you did a striptease.
I didn't.
You did? You took your nappy down? Mrs. Williams' daughter was quite shocked.
Well, she's very young. She's only naught.
Yeah.
Anyhow, you can't talk. I saw you puke over Angela's mother.
I couldn't help it.
Well, you shouldn't have eaten those cigarette ends. She took it jolly well, I thought, considering it was a new hairdo.
Hey, did you see Angela's pants?
Ooh. Wish I had a pair like that.
I thought her mother's were the best.
Oh, wet nappies. Look out, here comes Cyril's old dragon.
Morning, Hugh. Morning, Johnny. Stupid old cow. I'm sure I don't know where you learn these words. Daddy. Rarely. And now you behave, Cyril. I won't be long.
Don't bother to come back.
Morning, Cyril. You look terrible.
I feel it. That party was great, though, Hugh. I passed clean out.
No, you didn't. You just fell asleep.
Oh, did I?
I must say, Hugh, that dog of yours drove me potty.
Potty? That reminds me. Excuse me a minute.
While he's busy,
What's the matter with you?
Just practicing.
Hey, I did a header out of my high chair this morning, caused by a stir, yeah. Granny had a seizure, mother cried, and Pa nearly died laughing. Thought it was the funniest thing you'd ever seen.
Were you all right?
Oh, yeah, I landed on the dog. He's at the vet's.
Oh, are you with us again then, Hugh? Here comes your mother, Cyril. Pretend to be asleep.
Okay.
Well, well, who's asleep then? Who's asleep then?
I am, you silly old bag, and stop poking my teeth.
Song time again.
Hooray.
And tonight, Mr. Oddie's star guest is that glittering personality from the world of radio, the star of that spine-chilling series, The Curse of the Flying Wombat. It's Lady Constance Stachowiak.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here on your show, Bill, in front of all these very, very wonderful people.
It's wonderful to have you.
Wonderful.
Get on with it.
Thank you, baby.
In the valley in Switzerland, in a wood, lived a goat herd who would yodel just as old goat herd should. He was happy as he yodeled, though he wasn't much good.
In fact, he was mighty awful.
Hear him calling, yay, yay, yay. Hear him bawling, yay. Over the valley you'd hear him cry. Come to me. Poor little goat herd. Who would love a goat herd? You could not yodel.
I will.
Shut up. So he practiced his yodeling out of sight, till a beautiful maiden chanced to see him one night. So she answered his yodel, and to his delight, she turned out to be even worse. Hear her sighing. Hear her trying. Petrifying.
of our thrilling adventure serial, The Curse of the Flying Wombat. Freely adapted for radio from the Peter West Bedside Book of Dirty Limericks.
There was a young fellow called Cleese who was terribly easy to please. He was... My goodness, they're down round your knees.
As we rejoin Tim Brown Windsor and his companions, we find them trapped in a holiday camp in the Sahara Desert, being held up by Masha Wilkins.
Put him down!
He wants them to tell him the hiding place of the green eye of the little yellow dog, and so he herds them under a tree full of exploding coconuts and threatens to shake down the nuts and bolt. And then, of course, Father Christmas.
Where does he come in?
Down the chimney. Masha Wilkins, disguised as a polar bear, is threatening our hero with violence unless he reveals the whereabouts of the green eye before Masha can give him a count of 50.
Have you anything a little younger?
A count of 50? Well, not that young, Ducky.
Get on with it.
43, 44,
45,
47, 48, 49... One, two, three.
Jimmy, look! There's someone climbing down from the tree.
It's Wong, the supply keeper, and his brother, Wong, too.
3, 4, 5.
We know you're really Sergeant Wong, the detective.
Tell us where to find the green eye.
But unhappily, the green eye is to be found at the...
Sergeant Wong, don't die.
Oh, yeah, but it's in the script.
He's dead!
What a pity. He was a man of such courage, such fortitude.
43, 44.
But there's no time to lose. To Kathmandu.
Wait, give me water. Water.
Certainly, Auntie. We'd better all have a drink before we set off. I must admit, I'm quite thirsty, too.
Thirsty, three.
Ah, and now to Kathmandu.
All day long, we trudged through the desert.
Trudge.
So on and on we went towards Kathmandu, until at last the night caught up with us.
Oh, hail, strangers. I am Sir Seamus Connor of the Sahara Desert.
Curiouser. Then, suddenly...
Oh, look!
It's Alice in Wonderland.
No. There's a whistle-no lady with a broomstick sitting on the dune.
It's a sandwich.
Tell us, aged crone, which route should we take?
Follow this arrow.
Ah, an arrow route.
That way.
Look, she's pointing.
All witches wear hats like that.
And with that, she disappears on her broomstick.
It's the brush off.
We followed her instruction and reached a forest at the edge of the desert. Then suddenly Captain Cleese caught sight of a light through the trees.
Yes, and as I approached, I descried a tiny cottage with a cheerful lantern in the window and a plume of smoke curling upwards from the chimney.
Look, Captain Cleese, a tiny cottage with a cheerful lantern in the window and a plume of smoke curling upwards from the chimney.
Where? Oh, yes. Fancy finding two of them here. I say, yoo-hoo! Hello, anyone there? Yoo-hoo!
I'm sorry about that, my knees need oiling. But who would you be rousing a God-fearing body at this time of night? You're not the man that's come about the bagpipes.
No, we're travellers sent here by an ancient hag. We seek only warmth and a little succour, namely you.
Nay, have you know I'm Carrick MacFergus of the clan MacSpreader? And Laird of Glen Rhubarb and all points north and all the new Wokai.
That's a pretty kilt.
Yes, it's the rhubarb tartan.
You don't say.
I wish I hadn't. Well, come on in and warm your crummocks.
And so we trooped inside and we sat down on several wood chairs.
Just a wee joke.
In one corner of the room was a blazing fire and there was a fine pig turning on the spit. Soon put the fire out. And in the other corner was a strange machine full of threads and bobbins on which the old man's daughter was weaving her golden tresses.
That's the family heirloom. Well, it's expect you're all starving. Would you care to come in for some cold porridge?
Oh, yes, yes, please.
Now, well, you'll have to wait. It's still hot.
Caesar, Caesar, could we not throw a small party?
Certainly, but who shall we throw?
Oh, McFergus, why don't you entertain us with some Highland dancing?
Ah, no, 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 no. I washed my kilt last night and I can't do a fling with it.
Then we shall entertain you, Grimling. Put on a record.
Madam, I don't think I can find one that fits me.
Music! Music! Music!
A wolf.
Lady Constance. Lady Constance, may I have the pleasure?
Certainly. But let's dance first.
Whilst the company caroused merrily...
Merrily.
Captain Cleese took the Scotsman's arm.
Give me back my arm.
Look here, McFergus.
Yes?
Now, look at me. Do you know what I'm after?
I hope I'm wrong.
I'm a desperate man.
You must be.
Do you know anything of the green eye of the little yellow dog?
No.
It was his next words that told me he was lying.
I'm lying.
I don't believe you.
It's the truth. I swear it on my kilt.
All right. Let it drop for the moment.
A few hours later, we all climbed the stairs to look for our beds. But we got a nasty shock. It was a bungalow. But we found that Grimling was quite comfortable on the floor, so we all slept on him. But little did we know that in the nearby kitchen, things were hatching.
Stop brooding, Father.
I'm worried, lass. You know about the green eye.
Aye.
Yes, I. Well, they know about it.
No.
Yes, no, about it. But they'll never beat us to it. Oh, no. As the Pentelux wail in the Kelpie Crummock, we shall rise against the Sassenachs. 'Tis the revenge of the muck spreaders that we shall wreak tonight. They're all doomed. Now, where are my bagpipes? I must rehearse.
Oh, Feather, you promised to give up your wicked practices.
Windsor and his companions escape this hideous death by bagpipes. I think they can by bagpipes. Will they win the race for the green eye of the little yellow dog by bagpipes?
By bagpipes. Only £3.60.
Don't miss next week's exciting last and final installment of The Curse of the Flying Wombat, where our heroes fall foul of the law of the jungle, which is just like our script.
Which law is that?
The unwritten one.
Unwritten two, unwritten three,
The Angus Prune Tune brings to an end another edition of I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again. The voices you heard were those of Timbrook Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall and Bilotti. The scripts were by Graham Garden, David Hatch, Eric Idle and Bilotti, and Bilotti wrote the songs. The music was played by the miraculous Dave Lee, and the whole show was produced by Humphrey Barclay, of whom it has been said.
Yes.
So that's it until the same time next week. And once again, the voice of Radio Chin will tell you...
It's I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again. Again. Probably.
My name is Angus Prune, and I always listen to I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again.
You do.
I do. My name is Angus Prune, and I never miss that. I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again.
Well,
I sing in my golf, and I have a good love for the singing you sang off to me.
My name is Angus Prune,
and this is my tune, you go.
Thank you.
listening to Radio 740, CBC Toronto.